Chapter 44, Our Chosen Destiny. Opening questions. If we have been given a choice regarding our after-death destiny, and we refuse to seriously consider the options, are we not to blame if our after-death experience does not go well? If a person is brought before a judge due to wrongdoing, should not the judge bring justice? Is the most important concept of love about abstaining from doing bad or wrong things, or is it partaking in doing good and right things? If we are given a choice, come, enjoy Disney World today for the next month, or come, work on your faults and weaknesses, speak truth that makes you unpopular, and actually love people you find hard to love, and you will get a reward in 30 years much more valuable than a Disney World's week experience. What choice are the vast majority of people going to choose? As noted earlier, it should greatly trouble a person's conscience to hear it stated that the after-death experience of Adolf Hitler and Mother Teresa will be the same, or stated another way, that there will be no ultimate justice for Adolf Hitler and no ultimate reward for Mother Teresa. Even if that after-death experience is the annihilation of their soul or conscience, it would be the same experience and thus equal or the same. Therefore, if that belief is true, there is no life accountability for how human beings live their lives. One person can spend their life selflessly helping other people, while another could spend their life hurting other people, and their end would be the same. Certainly, if you are prone to using and abusing other people, that view would be attractive and encourage you to go with the darkness that is in you. In like manner, if you have a predisposition to do good to other people, yet you believe that at the end of your life there will be no reward for all that effort, that might well discourage you from doing the good things you are doing, especially if you struggle with the right motivation, love, while you are doing them. Either way, the belief that there is nothing after physical death but the annihilation of our soul will at a minimum reduce hope and motivation for good-intentioned or behaving people, and at its worst, it will enable those who like the evil they practice to really go for it. Of course, this view is not an argument for God's existence. However, it does address our human operating system that we were given, and it does suggest that the one who designed and made our operating system is concerned about the attributes he created. In other words, why give people a conscience, for example, if not to use it? And why would our conscience inform us not to do what is wrong or bad if the creator of that conscience was not concerned with wrong or bad behavior? There are concepts called sins of commission and sins of omission. They are valid concepts. Sins of commission are the things we do that we should not do. Examples are to cheat others and lie for selfish gain and to take more than we should, and do various things caused by our fear and self-pride and selfishness that harms other people. The sins of commission are easy to see and are typically not a big control problem for many people. The law and rules are all about deterring sins of commission, or restraining or punishing wrong behavior. Sins of omission are the things we don't do that we ought to do. For example, if I see a person injured on the ground, I ought to go help that person. Or as another example, if I know someone is planning to do something wrong, I ought to attempt to stop them. Or as an older person, I have a house with 2 or 3 empty bedrooms that would be a blessing to some needy souls, but I don't even think about that. Or as a final example, if I know that a person believes something that is harmful, say they believe that using violence or force is a good or proper way to achieve a goal or objective, then I ought to try to have a discussion with that person to try and show them why that belief is wrong. The same is true with all beliefs, including God beliefs or existential beliefs or spiritual beliefs or religious beliefs or political beliefs. As a follower of the one who says, quote, "I am the truth," unquote, we disciples address error that hides the light or pushes people away from him. This is the purpose of this book. The greatest sin is ignoring a father who loves us. Here is a little story in that regard. There once was a dad who really loved his daughter. He decided to build her a beautiful playset outside in the backyard and surprise her. So this dad carefully labored for 2 weeks to build this beautiful playset. He and his wife did not have much money, so this placeit was the most costly gift they ever gave to their daughter. The day came when the dad and mom were going to show their daughter the placeit. They put a blindfold on her and let her out the back door past the fence, which normally hid the new placeit. The dad took off the blindfold and said, "Look, my beloved daughter, what I built for you." The daughter looked at the beautiful placeit and said to her dad, "Dad, I don't believe you built this for me. I wonder who actually put it there." Now, how do you think that made the dad feel? The dad put much effort into that gift, only to have his daughter not believe he could do it, nor believe it was from him. So it is with our Heavenly Father and the children who refuse to believe he made them and all the capacities he gave us to do good and meaningful and have meaningful relationships. At the end of the day, or at the end of this book's read, where do you, the reader, stand? Was this just an intellectual endeavor that will never get past your head to your heart? Will you fight against the truths clearly explained and documented in this book in order to justify your current beliefs, religion, traditions, or lifestyle? Remember Gandalf saying to Frodo when in the caves of Moria? Frodo said, quote, "I wish the ring had never come to me. I wish none of this had happened," unquote. And Gandalf responded, quote, "So do all who live to see such times, but that is not for them to decide. All we have to decide is what to do with the time that is given to us," unquote. There is much truth in Gandalf's saying, and that saying applies to this book. You have been given the opportunity to look at something important and perhaps disturbing, and perhaps you are saying, "I wish I had never read this book," to which I would respond, "So do most who have the courage to seek that which is most important. But what you must decide now is what you are going to do with the truth and time that is given to you." We are accountable to our Creator for what we choose to do with the life He gave us. He lets us freely choose what we do with that life, thus our destiny. We are accountable to the truths that the Creator gave through His only begotten Son, and we are accountable to how well we used reason to find answers. In a sense, we are not really accountable to Him, but rather accountable to the truths He gave through His messenger. Yes, He designed the system with its components in the two realms in which we currently live and will enter when we physically die. It is an automatic accountability system. We will stand before the Creator's appointed judge, and the judge will review our life choices, our thoughts, our decisions, and our behavior, and show us the destiny we chose with those choices. But since the truths were already given, and the programming of the human conscience was implemented and given to nearly every human being ever born, the judge will merely point out the facts of the overall life choices we made and our associated behavior. Once we transition into the spirit realm, when our body dies, that dimension where the Creator and His messenger and judge exist, many will have a strong urge to stay in the denial and delusion they chose during their life on the earth. That will not be an option. Nothing can be hidden from the judge. Self-justifications will not stand. Excuses will be swept away in a torrent of clarity of truth. Truth and reality will be perfect and clear at that time. That is why he said, quote, "There will be weeping and gnashing of teeth," unquote, on the context of understanding reality and judgment. The weeping represents people who finally see what they traded for eternal life. The gnashing of teeth represents the anger of those who still refuse to acknowledge reality and remain self-justified in defending their wrong life. Both represent those who choose Disney World, the equivalent of most religious organizations and their selfish entertainment-oriented experience, over true life. In a nutshell, Christians do not listen to Joshua of Nazareth well, if at all. So, from that most important perspective, they and the religious system they create, maintain, and proclaim are a substitute for actually following the light, and thus they are a failure. With all their success according to what the world considers valuable, Christianity and the Christians that make it up at this time in history are ultimately and truly a failure. Without being the salt of the earth, without being a light for people to see by, By not caring about what is true and right according to the one they call their God, most importantly, by rejecting the true definition and meaning of love and substituting empty, money-pursuing, shallow lives, they are sadly and in truth a failure. What might the conversations look like for those who reject the light and their conscience? What might the final conversations look like? Chapter section, a final conversation, Christian or religious version. For most, they will not have a good answer to the primary question the judge will ask, quote, "Why did you ignore me, not care about what I said was true and right, and refuse to live a life characterized by love as I define that most important concept?" The religious person will answer, "But Lord, I was deceived by religious leaders, and that is why I ignored you and did not live a life of love." And the judge will say, "Well, you had easy access to my words and teachings for many years, but you chose to listen to other voices so you could justify your life of bondage to self, pride, and fear and selfishness, and thus your life of darkness and lovelessness." "Oh, but Lord, I had the Bible and I tried to live by the Bible." And the judge will respond, "Well, who asked you to look to this book in order to know me or follow me? I certainly did not. Instead, I said plainly and many times, quote, 'Follow me, and I am the way, the truth, and the life.' It was even recorded in that book that my father said, quote, 'This is my beloved and son, in whom I am well pleased. Listen to him.' And him is not the Bible. The Bible you had even had my words in red letters, thus setting them apart, but you ignored me just the same." "But Lord, I did a lot of good things in your name." And the judge will respond, "Actually, you only spent 7% of your waking hours of your life helping people, and most of that in relatively shallow ways by giving them things instead of helping them in more meaningful ways. And even if you spent 51% of your life doing your religious good deeds, you still ignored me and refused to truly love others and refused to fight for what is true and right, as I asked you to. You gave cheap, worthless things out of your abundance. You never even came close to thinking about laying down your life for your friends because you were too busy thinking about yourself and living for money, material things, and pleasure and entertainment and the other things of the world that you loved." "But Lord..." And the Lord will say, "I am truly sorry for you, but you must experience the consequences of your life choices, even as you held others to accountability in the life you were given. Wouldn't you agree that that is only just and fair?" Religious person: "But I heard about your mercy, Lord. Please grant me mercy now." Judge's reply: "You had my love, mercy, and forgiveness available to you for your whole life, and yet you rejected me, and thus you did not show mercy, love, or compassion to others, except when you perceived you got something out of it. Do you want to see the video again?" "No, please, no, Lord, not again." The judge: "Your destiny was always in your hands, and you had the ability to choose it all throughout the life you were given. You chose darkness and death instead of light and life. You chose to reject reason and the truth it would have led you to unless it served your selfish purposes. You will now need to experience the consequences of your choices. I am truly sorry. I never knew you because you chose to never want to get to know me. You substituted that stupid book you called the Bible and many other voices for my father's words and truths as I spoke them." Religious person: "But Lord," some angry yelling, vulgarities, and cursing, some weeping uncontrollably. The judge: "I never knew you because you rejected my invitations to get to know me. Depart from me, you who made up your own rules instead of listening to my voice and my way. You who called evil good and good evil. You who redefined my most important concept given to mankind, love. You who would do anything except truly love other people as I asked." Dear Christian or religious person, you have a choice. Continue in the darkness of loveless religion and the darkness of its confusion and hatred for what is true, or turn away from your loveless life and your hatred for the one who calls himself the truth, and instead find life, you can continue in the falsehoods of the successful failure, or you can start to love truth and listen to the one who says, I am the truth. You can continue on in the destiny of death and destruction you have chosen for yourself by virtue of your participating in the counterfeit and thus your rejection of the light. Or you can enter into life and love and start to follow the light of the world. You can become part of the solution instead of being part of the problem. Chapter section. The final conversation. Non-theist version. For most, they will not have a good answer to the primary question the judge will ask. Quote, why did you ignore me, not care about what I said was true and right, and refuse to live a life characterized by love as I defined that most important concept? Non-theist reply, but God, I saw what those people who said they represented you said and did, and it was wrong, and that is why I ignored you and did not live a life of love. The judge. And he will say, when others you encountered in life acted hypocritically, you did not reject what their stated standard was. For example, do you remember when you were mistreated by a physician once, and as a result, you read the Hippocratic Oath? Do you remember reading the oath which said, quote, to hold my teacher in this art equal to my own parents, to make him partner in my livelihood, when he is in need of money, to share mine with him, to consider his family as my own brothers, and to teach them this art, if they want to learn it, without fee or indenture, unquote. You read that and you realized that physicians were practicing hypocrisy in regard to the oath they took. You did not reject the author, Hippocrates, or his principles as false, or as not worth listening to, did you? Non-theist, no, God, but furthermore, you had easy access to my words and teachings for many years, but you chose to listen to other voices so you could justify your life of bondage to self-pride and fear and selfishness, and thus your life of darkness and lovelessness. Non-theist, but God, you did not provide any evidence as to your existence. God, how many times did you look in the mirror? When you were a child, you understood that machines needed a designer and creator, that they did not just happen. You would never have believed that computers' hardware created the software. When you were an adult, there were many times that you wondered about important concepts in your life, like love, forgiveness, right and wrong, and justice. And at your deepest level, you knew that those things needed a sufficient cause to account for their existence. You knew they were not physical, but you refused to go there because of the cage you chose to exist in. Non-theist, but God, remember that time you were in the car and your dad, the driver, had a heart attack and you were headed right for the train at the railroad crossing, and how you prayed, oh God, if you are real, please save us. Why did you call out to me in that situation? If you were honest, it was because you didn't want to cease to exist. And yet after that, you ignored the obvious and made life's most important decisions with no thought to life consequences or your existence. I offered you a way to not only continue to exist, but to experience a much better existence, but you rejected my offer. Non-theist, but God, I am truly sorry for you, but you must experience the consequences of your life choices even as you held others accountable in the life you were given. Wouldn't you agree that is only just and fair? Non-theist, but I heard about your mercy, Lord. Please grant me your mercy now. God, you had my love, mercy, and forgiveness available to you your whole life, and yet you rejected it, and thus you did not show mercy, love, or compassion to others, except when you perceived you got something out of it. Do you want to see the video again? Non-theist, no, please, not again. No, God. God, your destiny was always in your hands, and you had the ability to choose it all throughout the life you were given. You chose darkness and death instead of light and life. You chose to reject reason and the truth it would have led you to unless it served your selfish or self-justification purposes. You will now need to experience the consequences of your choices. I am truly sorry. I never knew you because you chose to believe that which was unreasonable. You substituted science for the most important truths of human life, like love, forgiveness, justice, and compassion, and thus you chose the path of self-deception. You learned to like it in your cage. Dear non-theist, just because at some point in history the people did not believe the earth was a sphere does not mean that it was not. In like manner, just because you believe that the force of evolution has created all things you experience does not mean it is true. While I may not convince you that the facts and evidence all around us clearly call for a designer sufficient to create human beings and all their aspects or qualities, I should be able to convince you of the non-physical reality importance of reason and forgiveness, for example. You have many legitimate grievances towards religious people and Christians and their beliefs and practices. In many cases, you have done well in pointing out their hypocrisy, contradictions, and wasteful practices. At some point, however, you would do well to make sure you are judging the religious people with the same diligence and standard that you judge yourself. At the end of the day, we are all living for something. We all have some purpose that drives our behavior, decisions, and work. Some purposes are nobler than others. Most live for money, material things, and themselves, and that is not a noble life. As we have seen, we either are part of the problem or part of the solution of the world's problems, of our neighbor's problems, of our own personal relationship problems. We are either endeavoring to live selflessly and help others, or we're living selfishly and looking primarily to help ourselves and those from whom we get something in return. We can know what a well-lived life looks like, for we regularly make judgments about that matter. The question we must ask ourselves is, what about me? Can I rise above the selfish life? Can I make a difference, a positive impact on people's lives that I touch or influence? Can I help change people's existential destiny? Can I follow and bring others to follow the perfect leader? What motivates me to make such an effort? It is very difficult to swim against popular sentiment, against our own selfish nature, and against those who seek to keep an unjust status quo or to bring falsehood and wrongful contention. For those who respond to the light, who hear his voice, and who make him their leader and thus change and start to live according to his principles, there is one more conversation of note. Chapter section, A Most Beautiful Conversation. Joshua, hi Rihanna, so good to see you in fullness. You have done well. Disciple, but Master, I failed in so many ways. Joshua, that is okay. What matters is your heart to try, and you did, consistently try. I don't care about what you consider your failures. I care about your efforts, your commitment, your perseverance. Disciple, really? Rihanna starts to brighten. I don't think I had much faith. I often focused on the failures because I saw so much need and I wanted to help people, but despite my efforts, it seemed no one would listen. Joshua, I understand, really. I see things, Rihanna. I know how things are. If you recall, when our Father sent me, he sent me to millions of people, and yet very few listened to me, even though I did not sin and had the power to perform miracles to get people's attention. It doesn't matter how much failure you believe you had. Rather, what matters is that you had faith in our Father and myself, and you tried. You kept opening your mouth and communicating in other ways to try and turn people to me. Disciple, I spent so many years trying to tell Christians about you, and as a result, I was hated, rejected, and despised by them. I don't know how many times I heard, you are wrong. At times, it was so hard to continue due to all those religious voices telling me I was wrong. Joshua, I understand. It was the same for me when I was on the earth in your realm. The religious establishment and those who make it up or have allegiances to it have always been against me. As one of your songwriters once said, that's just the way it is. Some things will never change. But you did well. You did not let their voices of faithlessness, doubt, and error turn you away from me. and my way. Disciple: But Master, I don't think I loved as well as I should. I had this fault and this weakness, and so I didn't know if I ever really understood your love well, nor am I sure I expressed it well. Joshua: Dear Rihanna, you understood my love well enough. If you recall, my love for you changed your life. You went from a taker to a giver, from a fearful person to a person of faith, from a proud person to a person of humility, from a selfish person to a selfless person. Just because you could not find many who were willing to love with you does not change the fact that you chose to try and love me back and to love others. I saw how many people you invited into my way of life and love. Just because they refused does not mean you failed. No, you were faithful with what you had. Disciple: Rihanna is weeping now. I don't know what to say. Joshua: Remember all those times you were rejected due to your sincere faith in me? Do you remember the jobs you lost because you spoke what was true when people didn't want to hear it? Do you remember your being forced to give up people who you cared about because you were only given two choices, follow them or follow me? Do you remember the ill will and harm intended for you because you stood for what was right and true? Do you remember how when they threatened to take your life, you stood your ground due to your faith in me and your love for us? I know those times don't seem like much time in your life, but those choices define both your faith in us and the quality and importance of the life you chose. Disciple: Rihanna can't speak. Joshua: You experienced so much rejection and heartache in your life, so much loneliness and unwanted separation, just because you chose to put your faith in me and our Father, because you would not settle for anything else less than seeing true love lived out among people. People treated you wrongly and badly simply because you tried your best to speak what was true, and you tried to help them even when they did not want to be helped, which offended them. Disciple: Rihanna's eyes are bright and filled with tears. Joshua: Well, Abba and I remember. In fact, we can review it anytime we want. My friend and sister, you will be going to see our Father in a bit here, but I need to say this again. Well done, Rihanna. You were faithful in a little, and so you are going to be given much. I am proud to have you as my friend and sister, and I can speak for our Father in this. He is proud and grateful to have you as his daughter. Come, enter into the fullness of eternal life. And the light says, quote, I am the resurrection and the life. Whoever puts their faith in me, though he or she dies, yet shall they live. And whoever puts their faith in me shall never die. And he asks, where is your faith? All it takes is for someone to show the way. I am the way.